I've shared in the past, I was fortunate enough to work at the Library of Congress when I was in graduate school. Today, we're going to be speaking with Nathan Dorn, currently the curator of rare books at the Law Library of Congress in Washington, D.C., a position he has held since 2011. He holds a bachelor's degree in religion from the University of Chicago, a master's degree in Jewish studies from the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, and a master's degree in library and information science from Catholic University. Before coming to the Library of Congress, Nathan spent several years engaged in advanced graduate study of Rabbinic Judaism at the University of Chicago's Divinity School and in seminaries in Jerusalem. Nathan is also currently a JD candidate at Georgetown Law, and he has been the curator for the Library of Congress's Magna Carta exhibit. Welcome, Nathan, and thanks for joining us on the Book Report.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Why is the Magna Carta, a document from the 13th century, still important today?
Well, that's a very, very good question. And I think if anybody takes the time to actually read the document and go through the language, what they'll discover is that it addresses concerns really from another world. So many things about institutions and customs that simply don't exist today, that haven't existed in centuries, and yet we're supposed to be looking at this document saying, well, this document is somehow the foundation of our constitutional tradition, and it's a puzzler. And it would have been a 13th century document that stayed in its 13th century and never traveled through posterity with some great reputation, except for a very specific chain of events that led to its evaluation and reevaluation over time, and eventually its use as a foundation for certain legal arguments that became very important in the course of time. Those legal arguments, after centuries, would become a springboard for people who would later claim constitutional rights that extended throughout history, and it's as a result of those processes and those historical events that we have come to think of Magna Carta as some great foundation of our constitutional rights.
For those of us with fuzzy historical memories, can you give us a brief overview of the document's history?
Sure. Magna Carta is a 13th century document. It was created in 1215 as a result of a compromise between King John of England and his tenants in chief, his major landholders. We call them the barons. There was the beginning of some kind of a civil war. The barons were revolting against King John as a result of a number of grievances. They felt that King John taxed them too much, that he cheated them out of money in the course of their payment for rights to their land. They felt that he was losing all of his foreign wars, which cost them tremendously, and they were unable to recoup the loss with land that they might have gained as a result of his victories. And many people were horrified by John's poor relationship with the Catholic Church, and as a result of the interactions he had with the Pope, many people in his kingdom were ready to look for new possibilities for the future of their kingdom.
Why did the Library of Congress decide to mount a Magna Carta exhibit at this time?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. We're looking ahead now at the 800th anniversary of Magna Carta. It was created in 1215, and here we are in the beginning of 1215. It was agreed upon in June of 1215. June 15th of 1215 is the date that everybody remembers. It probably underwent negotiations from June 15th to June 19th of that month. So we're celebrating the 800th anniversary of Magna Carta this year, in 2015. We figured this would be a great time to commemorate Magna Carta publicly. But then there's another anniversary that we were commemorating. Now, the Library of Congress is fortunate that we received Magna Carta on loan already for the first time in 1939. And we're commemorating the 75th anniversary of Magna Carta's first visit to the United States.
I see. You know, I had the opportunity to visit the exhibit, and I was really fascinated to learn about the Magna Carta's journey during World War II. Can you fill us in on that?
Sure. The story goes like this. Magna Carta came across the ocean to the United States in 1939 for an appearance at the World's Fair in New York City. It appeared there at the World's Fair for a number of months, and when the fair closed in October of 1939, the war was already on in Europe, And so conversations among the leadership turned to this idea that maybe it's not a great idea to move Magna Carta back across the ocean under uncertain conditions, and it might be nice to keep Magna Carta here in North America for the duration of the war. And so it was decided between Franklin Delano Roosevelt and the then Librarian of Congress Archibald MacLeish, and as well as the British Ambassador Lord Lothian and Winston Churchill, that Magna Carta would stay at the Library of Congress, and that's exactly what happened. There's a very elaborate handing off ceremony where the British ambassador arrived at the Library of Congress, and Archibald MacLeish was there, and speeches were delivered, and there was a large crowd, and they placed Magna Carta on display in the mezzanine of the Jefferson Building of the Library of Congress, the Thomas Jefferson Building, where it was on display next to the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States. Those documents were still here at the Library of Congress at that time, and they would later be moved to the National Archives.
Well, that brings up another question. How does the Magna Carta displayed at the library differ from the one on display at the National Archives?
That's a very good question. You know, the Magna Carta as we imagine it is different from the Magna Carta that influenced history and influenced our constitutional tradition. Let me explain. The Magna Carta that influenced us in terms of law and historical development was a later reissue of Magna Carta, in fact. It was the Magna Carta of Henry III, a Magna Carta that was written in 1225. There were several Magna Cartas presented by English kings over the course of the 13th century. That 1225 Magna Carta became the text that would eventually be entered into English law in 1297. Now, we were saying that Magna Carta was created in 1215, and now I'm saying that it didn't enter into law until 1297, and that's right. It was never entered into the statute roll, the official record of English statutes, until that late date. And so the Magna Carta that people cite to in legal texts is always this 1225 Magna Carta. And that's the one that has had real influence in political debate and in legal writing for centuries. Now that's all well and good, but when we think about Magna Carta, of course what we think about is King John and the barons at Runnymede, and there's this conflict and they resolve it with this great document that would then stand for the ages as a symbol of the rule of law. And that's exactly why so the 1215 Magna Carta and the 1225 Magna Carta are so different. 1225 Magna Carta really becomes the thing that influences history, whereas the 1215 Magna Carta is the thing that becomes symbolic and legendary. It's the Magna Carta of legend. It's the one we really remember.
We're speaking with Nathan Dorn, curator at the Library of Congress, on today's Book Report. When I visited the library this past month, I was fascinated by the Jefferson Library exhibit. Can you tell the listeners about that?
I'll be happy to. Thomas Jefferson was an incredible book collector. In the context of the 18th century, not very many people had large personal libraries. By the beginning of the 19th century, Jefferson had the largest personal library of anyone in America. It was 6,487 volumes, a really mammoth library, and it was a point of pride with Jefferson. Now, in 1814. The British burned the Capitol building during the course of the War of 1812, and as a result of that burning, the Library of Congress, which was then housed in the Capitol building, was destroyed. So afterwards, the thought began to circulate that we should reconstitute the Library of Congress by an act of acquisition, and acquiring Thomas Jefferson's library would take what might be one of the greatest libraries in the New World and make it a permanent heritage of the American people, a resource that the Congress could turn to have information on any imaginable topic. And that's precisely what Congress did. They purchased Jefferson's library for $23,000, almost $24,000 in 1815, and as a result of that acquisition, the Library of Congress has been in possession of Thomas Jefferson's personal library since that time. Now, Jefferson's library was never meant to be just some kind of heirloom. It was meant to be a real library for the use of the people. And so, Jefferson's books were scattered throughout the library and were never held separately until very, very much later. It wasn't until the beginning of the 21st century that the Library of Congress decided it was time to separate out and reconstitute Thomas Jefferson's collection. And there was a twist. On Christmas Eve of 1851, A fire destroyed nearly two-thirds of Jefferson's collection in the Capitol building at the Library of Congress in the Capitol, and as a result, we only had about a third of the a little better than a third of the books that Thomas Jefferson sold to the library when we began to reconstitute the collection. And so so there was a project to rebuild and redevelop the collection according to a list of the items that were originally acquired. And so we replaced what we could from our own collection with sister copies of the editions that are listed in his list. And where we couldn't find those in our collection, we sent somebody out to acquire Jefferson's the rest of the items in Jefferson's collection, sister copies of those items, from vendors throughout the world. And so the result is what you can see now on display on permanent exhibit on the second floor of the Jefferson Building in the Library of Congress, and that's Thomas Jefferson's reconstituted library. It's in a very beautiful glass installation, and it's something that if you have a chance, you should definitely come to see.
Nathan, it was a fascinating exhibit, and it's been wonderful speaking with you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Alrighty, bye.
Bye-bye.